You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Okay, there are some conversations that feel like sitting across from a friend who sees you, who gets you, and reminds you that you're not too young, too late, or too lost to step into everything God has called you to be. That's the conversation we're about to have tonight. Our shapeshifter is a phenomenal woman, Thubelihle Maduma, a Christian youth development coach. She is a mentor, a YouTuber, a speaker, a stylist. Yeah, speaking of which, I'll tell you the story when she comes on. And founder of God and Growth, which is a movement dedicated to raising a generation of young people who are spiritually rooted, who are mentally strong, and practically equipped for life. Thubelihle's work is something that you might mistaken as preaching at young people if you're not looking carefully. But when you do look carefully, you'll understand that what she's really trying to do is walk with young people, to walk them through identity struggles, faith crises, relationships, finances, and every part of life that makes growing up such a wild and beautiful experience. Tonight she's here to challenge us, to inspire us, and to help us all remember that growth is not just for Instagram quotes, but for real life. Thube, hello.
Hi, Mpumi.
How are you, my girl?
I'm good, my love. How are you?
I'm all right. Thube, you're scared. I owe you.
Yes. Yes.
That's the confession I needed to make. She's really a stylist, and I took her skirt and I've never returned it. Oh man, I'm so excited to be talking to you tonight in this capacity. You've interviewed me, but I've never interviewed you, so I'm very excited for this.
How tables can turn.
Thube, tell me something. Before the titles and platforms, before the multifacetedness and all the hats you wear, who are you at your core? Who is the woman behind this work?
Who? A woman who went through some very rough patches. Who life said, you better grow up, girl. Because no one is going to do it for you.
Sure.
So it's the woman who had to learn how to be masculine within a feminine body.
Ooh.
In order to try and survive. Because life did her dirty. Yeah.
Mm. You're saying something that I think would be triggering or is triggering to a lot of alpha females who may have been in your shoes but don't really have your context. It sounds like you are saying the ones who are best able to survive this world are those who have got masculine energy or masculine tenacity. Talk to me about the difference between femininity and masculinity that forced you to take on masculinity in order to survive.
So by definition, we would say being masculine means you don't cry. It means take things as they are, you move. It means you are always looking for a solution. You are the problem solver wherever. That's what being masculine is. Whereas being feminine means you are here to care, to nurture, comfort. So being one who you don't, life forcing you, or rather, let me say, what your needs, what you need cannot be satisfied by you comforting yourself, by nurturing yourself. You have to wipe those tears away, stand up, and solve problems.
I hear you. And I think when I said some, I was talking about myself because I resonate so deeply with what you're saying. And before we continue, I'm realizing that whenever I respond or react to what you're saying, your line cuts up, your line breaks. So I'm going to want you to assume that I'm actually reacting without me using my voice because I want people to actually hear everything you have to say. Okay.
Sure.
Tube, if you don't mind sharing, what happened? And I'm asking this not because I'm curious or nosy, but because context and background matters so much when we interface with people who are, I guess, as powerful as you are. But I'm also asking this because, and I know a bit of your story, if not the bulk of it. I'm asking this because you run an organization called God and Growth, and we'll get to it towards the end. The kind of things that happen to people, that happen to you rather, or the thing that happened to you is a thing that could make everyone run away from this God because, like, do you really care? Where were you? But you chose to run in his arms, and now you're inviting everybody else into his arms. Before you tell us why that was the best solution for you, what happened?
A day before, 2 days before, yes, 2 days before, I wrote my matric exam. I was gang raped on my way to church for an all-night prayer. I was with a friend. And yeah, the gents came in and they were like, we want some. And one after the other were like, me too. And then that happened. Unfortunately, I come from a very patriarchal home. And my dad, having grown up around a space where it didn't teach him to cry, to feel things, to be empathetic, or to even be affectionate. He didn't know how to deal with it when it came to me, because he grew up in an environment where they never got the opportunity to process their emotions at all. So he didn't know how to allow me to process emotions. Hashtag hurt people, hurt people. So that then contributed to the sadness that I was already feeling, where I just feel like man stripped away my dignity, but I'm also feeling like I'm not getting the space to cry, let it all out and feel what I'm feeling. I'm expected to move from where I am right now, this pain, and continue like nothing happened because no one is talking about it. No one is saying, how are you feeling? Are you ready to write exams? I have exams coming up on Monday. This is happening Saturday evening. So life is having me wipe my tears. That's why I was like, masculinity, because as being feminine, you would then be expected to cry it all out, be in your feelings. But as a man, no man, you don't cry, you move. So I had to do that. I literally moved. I remember I cried Sunday morning after cleaning the house and washing dishes. And my mom said, go study. And I went to the bathroom, looked myself in the mirror, and I'm like, you girl, you are not doing this again. And that was the last time I cried about the rape, until I think a month later when I visited my aunt and she looked at me in the eye and said, how are you really doing? A year later, I was robbed. I was coming to the house from school, from varsity, and these guys just came in, followed behind, and took me, searched the house, took some stuff, and then from there, put me inside the boot, drove around with me for a second, and then they dropped me off where there is now Cosmo City Mall. It used to be just an open space there. They dumped me off there. That was 2015. 2014, because I was raped 2013. So this one happened 2014. And then 2017, I was abducted. I was coming from the Department of Education.
Where to be? Yo. Yo. And, you know, I'm reacting like this because I'm getting those reactions on our WhatsApp line as well, right? And I think more than anything, as I'm hearing your stories, and I'm sorry to cut you off, I do want you to go back. it's re-emphasizing the depth of the question. Why do you then run into these arms and not away? But continue. Just know that I am shocked.
So that happens. Get into a normal taxi thinking it's a normal taxi. Only to find out, literally, I mean, you know, Roadport right there by Florida KFC. I'm thinking we're just crossing the robots. You know, they're like, hey, this is a robbery. Then they took me, drove me around, dumped me off at Meadowlands railway station. Like, not even the station center itself, but like in the middle of it. Then had to back to Roadport. So why this God? Why not away and still in him? I did not get a space, including the church, aside from my, I think I would say from my dad, because I felt like I needed my dad. I didn't get the space to really cry, or I didn't get solutions, you know, until I started staying alone. 2020, 2021, and I realized I was in so much pain, and there are so many things I have done as a result of this pain. I have been in the arms of man. I've prematurely entered relationships. I have broken and messed up beautiful friendships. I have lied to myself, convinced myself of certain things that are not true. All because of this trauma and whatnot like that. So I said to God one day, because now remember, I'm no longer in my house. I'm staying alone. And I feel like in the house I could hide because there are people. But now I'm alone. I'm alone every night. And I remember one time I said to God, God, I'm in so much pain and I don't think a psychologist can help me. So I need you to help me. And I dedicated a good 14 to 15 days. And I would come back from work and look at the wall. And I found a little corner. And I said, I know you said we must not create graven images, but I'm going to assume that you are seated up there and you are hearing me. So I'm going to talk to you in a way that I really feel like you're here. And that's it. I started having conversations with God, and little by little, he healed me. I felt the hand of God touching me, and it made sense that with God, I can grow. All this while, I thought I was growing, but I was growing in pain, not realizing. I was growing in all aspects of my life. But there was still pain that was destroying all these other aspects. So without God, there's no true growth. But with God, there's definitely growth. So that's why I didn't run. He healed me.
Sure. Three figures, one thought. How do you not hate men after all these experiences? Because I'm assuming that all of them involved men. The taxi driver, the people who abducted you, the gang rapists. How do you not hate men? How do you engage with the man in your house who, instead of shielding you and maybe even raging and seeking justice and vengeance for you, and how do you relate to God, the Father, as a man? Well, not men, like, you know, we can't touch him, but talk to me about your relationship with men.
Okay. First, why do I not hate men? I do not hate because men did not create themselves. Ooh. Men were created by God in a sinful world. So what men can do, women can do. And just because there is one aspect of sin that they are most dominant in, it doesn't make the female gender less sinful. And just because I have personally been a victim of man, it does not reflect all the other men that have been present in my life. Yes, my dad might not have supported me in the way that I desired. But he was always there when I needed him. It might not been in this way, like at that, in this particular incident, I needed him a certain way and he wasn't there. And when you understand God's grace towards you, you will be able to render that same person that grace because you understand where they come from. And I, yes, it doesn't take away the pain that I felt of my dad's absence or his lack of support. But having understood how he grew up, you are like, you are asking something that is foreign from him.
Oh.
You are asking him to hug you. It's like asking, this might be a very extreme example, but asking a two-year-old to reason. Because for him, affection was weakness. For you to show your emotion was weakness. That's the world he grew up in. So that's how I have continuously, I think, nurtured my relationship with my father.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but he is learning to be affectionate. Growing, like he's learning to be affectionate. Now my dad can hug. Mm-hmm. We have joined him with my sisters. Now my dad can say, I love you, Mdanam. He never used to say that growing up because he never heard it. At all. Even my mom will tell you that I don't even know how I got into a relationship with your dad. I don't think I was ever told that I'm loved. I was hearing you are important. You belong here. You know, things like that. So it's understanding where a person comes from. And the last one was, how do I relate to God as a father? Mm-hmm. You see, when you have an understanding that God is your father, you will give your biological father grace.
Oh, man.
Because you understand that he is not God. And just because he had the capability to make birth you, it does not mean that he has the intelligence and the wisdom to sustain you or carry you. That he needs to draw from God. God for me is not just a father, I guess, but I always, when I think about God for me, is a healer, because he's this person who, when I was dead, laid his hand and say, wake up. But he was also not waking up to existence. He was waking me up to presence and relationship.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's how I relate to him.
You've taken on the role of mentor to a lot of young people. Who mentored you? Who spoke life into you when you were growing up?
I don't have a specific person. I'll be lying. I desired this. I would have somebody to hold my hand and guide me. My dad and my mom played an absolute pivotal role. My mom showed me and taught me respect. That as a person, be respectful, be kind. And my dad taught me integrity and the power of reputation. So I definitely did learn from a lot of people in my life, but I cannot specifically point at one person and say this one. But God, God taught me, Mpumi, I won't lie. With hearing God, how do I do this? How do I do that? And now having come into the world of mentorship myself, me even saying I am a mentor, it was me realizing that I'm learning so much from God, I cannot keep it to myself. This is something that I want to realize at my age, at that particular time. I need somebody else to also experience it. Yeah.
And I've interfaced with your brand so many times that I know that you really drive agency and ownership. And I'm curious about when you look back at your life, what was the moment that you realized, if I don't take ownership of my growth, I will stay stuck? And how did that change everything, including the brand you now represent, I guess, or are the leader of?
You're doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is what woke me up. To say to you, if you do not admit that you were hurt, that you have not done this thing, you will be doing this very same thing. And somehow you are expecting a different outcome.
Imagine.
And it will not. You need an absolute, complete transformation and renewing of your thought process. And therefore, the action plan will also change. You need to understand your who and what and why. The who is, who are you right now? What are you doing to mess up who you are called to be? And why do you need to work hard to become the who? Those were three questions I had to ask myself. And why kept me going? So being cognizant of the what, when you're aware what is destroying you and why you are working to move away from the destruction, it will enable you to stay consistent. Our problem is we do not acknowledge things that are destroying us. We try and repaint them in a different color. And when we see that we cannot repaint them, we shift them from the bedroom and we put them in the sitting room. And then when we feel like it's in the full view, no, let me put it inside the cupboard so that I don't see it every time, but it's there. It's still destroying you. So again, don't just know the what is destroying you. Know why you need to get out of this destruction. Because if you don't have that reason, then there is no drive to fight it, to say, let me move, let me go forward. And I, when I found out my why, I don't know if this is part of what I'm supposed to talk about, but Bumi, one of the saddest things in youth is not knowing your purpose.
You are coming home. You're coming home to me. That's what you're doing. Go ahead.
I always say one thing, God, I feel like I am God's favorite child, is that I discovered why. I discovered my why early. And that so when I realized, okay, Tube, you not being healed, you moving from one relationship to another, you always suffering with imposter syndrome, you always trying to gain people's like and whatnot like that. This is destroying you. You need to put it away. And then you figure out how to do that. Now, when you're still figuring out the how, the why drives you so that you can go on. And my why, God was like, Tube, I have called you to be a source of knowledge and an example. That's what God says to me. That's what my calling is. That's what my purpose in this world to be. I am a source of knowledge and an example of what it means to live a Christ-like character. Now, then God says to me, for you to be able to do this, I need you to share my word. But I also need you to enter into spaces where my word is not allowed. And you can use your behavior, the principles of the Bible, as an entering wedge into those spaces. And that's how I came into education and was very driven by it. And I said, I am going to be a stylist because I need to share the principle of modesty. I am going to run Plated Plants, which is a vegetarian and vegan catering company, because I am ministering the health message. So having a clear understanding of your why will keep you sane, will keep you away from destruction, and will keep you searching for the how to get there.
And what do you think is the mistake that a lot of young people are doing in pursuit of their purpose? What are they getting wrong?
Number one, dear Lord, help me. Walking, using your feet to walk in somebody else's path. That's the biggest mistake.
Especially in this world of influencers and social media.
You are using your time to fulfill somebody else's dream with your time, delaying your own accomplishments, getting further and further away from your own destination, simply because you do not know what your path is, or you are aware, but it's not what you think is fancy or favorable or happening, right? So that's mistake number one, not asking God to show you your path, but trying to have God direct you to somebody's path. We think we are God, but we are not. Our prayers to God about our purpose is in context of what we have seen from someone else. I've seen Mpumi being a speaker. I've seen Mpumi taking a risk and leaving corporate and running her own thing. That should be mine too, because I'm a hustle babe, right? But that may not be what God has called you for. So that's mistake number one. Mistake number two, how do I say? Purpose is such a personal thing. And you must understand that you will not find your purpose in people. Third mistake that I have seen happen so many times is the assumption that careers are purposes. Careers are simple avenues of fulfilling the purpose.
100%.
So many people then start feeling like they are not living purposeful lives because they are hoping to find fulfillment in their jobs. But your job instead should be an outpouring source of what's already within you. You are using your job to show off, to pour out what you are fulfilled about. So I think those are the three biggest mistakes that people make regarding purpose. Another one, maybe a light one, is assuming that just because I like something, then this is what I'm purposed to. You can be passionate about something. I mean, passions, I think we spoke about at some seminar. Passion and prowess is very important in discovering your purpose. But you can be passionate about making hair, but that does not mean that.
Or dancing, Claire.
Or dancing. Exactly. You can. I mean, you like singing.
Yeah.
But does that mean that's your purpose?
Negative.
And we must also be aware of skills. Like you being a singer. I hope no one is going to hate me for this. You being a singer, for me personally, is not necessarily the purpose. But singing is the avenue in which you are fulfilling the purpose.
Mm.
The purpose might be to heal,
mm-hmm.
to bless, to restore,
mm.
to teach, to share knowledge, but you are doing that through singing.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, you work with the youth to be at a time when mental health struggles are at an all-time high. How do you hold space for their pain without burning yourself out?
Mm. I love this question because there was a time where I did burn out.
Ooh.
I did. I really did.
Mm.
Because I have to wake up at any time when someone needs to talk.
Mm.
It could be 10 at night. It could be 2 p.m., 2 a.m. And I need to stay in that call with someone who is close to committing suicide.
Mm.
I need to stay in that call with someone who is venting about a parent who is absent, you know. So it's a lot. But one thing that I think helped me was reminding myself, maybe let me use the word rebuke.
Mm.
Rebuking myself that I am not one to carry the burden of people.
Mm.
I shouldn't carry the burden. My personality, by the way, I'm a choler sanguine.
Mm.
That means choleric and combination. I have a strong personality, but I'm also very sensitive,
yeah.
very empathetic.
Yeah.
I feel a lot.
Mm.
So that also came in, but I had to learn that I shouldn't carry this burden. When someone has told me what they have told me,
mm.
when they have shared, I must sympathize, empathize, bring it to God, and leave it there.
Mm.
Play as best as I can so that should anything happen, I don't carry regret. And this was an important lesson to learn, Mpumi, because Jesus, that's where he's going to be when he comes back. He's not going to carry regret when we do not make it to heaven.
Mm.
He's not going to be enough. So as long I've done enough, me inquiring from God, okay, God, this person is close to committing suicide. What must I do?
Mm.
Should I call the police? Should I do whatever? Do everything that I can do within human power inspired by the Holy Spirit. Then you'll be at peace. But what kills us is when we try to solve people's problems and we want to play heroes. It's not going to work.
Mm. You know, as you're talking about those personality traits, I'm melancholic. And as you're speaking, I'm just like, you're better you than me, because not only am I an empath, I would take on their pain and wear it on my sleeve, in my socks, in my cap. I would be their pain. So rather you than me. And perhaps that's why we're not called to the same thing, because God understands our temperaments. God understands our very makeup. And that is why it's so dangerous to want to step into the shoes of somebody who is wired so different to you and think that you will succeed there, or you will have any close relationship with God there, when the instruction for what you're trying to do, you cannot get, because God is not in the business of confusion.
Absolutely. Not at all. Sure. Not at all.
I'm wondering... Yeah. What are the three non-negotiables you teach every young person that you mentor? And I know that people are going through different things and they have different, I guess, different goals and aspirations, but there must be a bedrock, perhaps maybe even the pillars of God and growth that are non-negotiable for everyone who wants to see growth in their lives and growth that is fueled and powered by God.
I love that. I've drawn these lessons from how, because you can't grow when you have not healed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The plant, when you plant it, it can't grow in a damaged soil. regardless of how much you water and cultivate it.
Mm.
You can't put a plant in concrete and water it and say it will grow because I've planted it.
And I'm watering it.
Water. It's not going to happen. So you need to first heal the soil. So one, the first thing, identify what is damaged about you. Want to grow in whatever aspect you want to grow in. You are coming in for financial mentorship. What's damaged about you as far as finances are concerned?
So, but do you use that language? And I'm asking because a lot of people, even though they know that hey, Ziyabuya and things are not okay, but the idea of somebody saying, even with their mouths, that you are damaged. What is damaged about? Do you use that language or do you imply it?
I would use words like broken.
Mm.
What didn't go right?
Mm.
What is not wanted?
Mm.
Yeah. So not the word damaged. I think I'm just trying to give a broader view, like the most visual picture that I can give.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first thing to recognize, that this soil, what type of soil are you? Because we're going to start planting here. So are things going to grow? And these include not just traumatic experiences that you have, you have went through, but they also include character traits. You might be a person with temperament. You might be a hot temper.
Mm.
You might be a person who is very impulsive, right? That's something that will set you back in your growth journey, because when you think it, you do it.
Mm.
You feel you want it. You want it, you need it. So that's the first thing.
Mm.
After then recognizing what is wrong, you then go on to say, what do I hope to achieve?
Mm.
So, because here's the thing. You find the soil and then you say, from this type of soil, because that's the analogy I think I can best use. You don't have a seed, Mpumi, right? That it's not the seed that decides where you're going to plant it. It's the soil that tells you what kind of seed you're going to plant in this place.
Mm.
It's the season that tells you which plants are going to grow in the season. It's not you that says, I want to plant a mango. I want to plant... No. You look at the season and you're saying, this is what I'm going to plant, right? So then that's why it's important to find out what type of a soil are you. And that soil then says, oh, because I'm this soil, we need to grow up this way. This is what we need to build. And it helps you also in the journey of purpose, because that's where it all starts. Your purpose is right there. The soil is the foundation of your purpose. So that's the second question. The third and most important thing is growth requires work.
Mm.
If you do not want to work, you are not going to grow.
Yeah.
Growth requires a breaking. If you do not want to prune certain things, you are not going to grow. There is no tree that we do not prune. A rose, for it to be that beautiful, it includes thorns.
Mm.
So there are certain things that are painful that must come as a result or in conjunction to your growth. And if you're not willing to grow, to experience that, yeah, that includes exposure. Growth will expose you.
Yeah.
It will expose your weaknesses. So that's, I think, in a nutshell, those three things. What type of a soul are you? What is wrong? What is damaged about you that needs to be fixed? Number three, what is it that you want to grow? What is it that you want to become exactly?
Mm.
Then you say, I'm committed to this thing that I want to become, so I'm ready to grow. Then I then listen to the strategies on how I can grow. And we get this concept mainly from healing, in how Christ heals. Every single time, a good 80% of Christ's healing miracles, he would come close to you. That's the soil. Come and touch you. And then we will be told that immediately this thing went away, which is the what. You know, what we want to get rid of. And then from there, Christ gives an instruction. Either he says, go do this after this, or he says, don't do this after this. But more than anything, what you realize is that most of the people that were healed by Christ, they ended up having a relationship with Christ. Peter's mother-in-law, when she was healed, the Bible says that, and immediately when the flu went away, she served Christ.
Yeah.
So you must realize about growth. Growth comes with responsibility. God doesn't heal you for nothing. We must really stop comforting ourselves for that. God doesn't heal you for nothing.
Oh.
I recently went to the hospital. I had a heart attack and had a temporary paralysis.
Are you giving a story that you read somewhere or to where? No. Please, man, stop stressing me.
When last did you see me on the socials? I recently came back, literally. So when I couldn't speak, I couldn't move. The only thing that I could feel was my abdominal area, my limbs. There was no feeling anymore. There was no sensation anymore. And God brought that thing to me, brought the story of Peter's mother-in-law so many times. He said, why am I healing you? You need to tell me. You're asking me to heal you for what?
Mm.
For me to take up space or waste space.
Mm.
God doesn't heal us. God doesn't grow us to tick off a box. It's always to serve and to fulfill a certain call. So before we ask God for things, and before we say, I want to do this, I want to achieve that, I want to achieve that, you must ask yourself, to what does this serve God's call? And one thing you must know about God is that if he doesn't serve his call, he will step away and allow you to do it yourself, just like what happened with Saul. He'll say, go on, my child. You want it? Go on, but count me out.
Tibi, how are you doing now?
I am well. I'm well. Life is a bit different. I cannot do certain things that I used to do.
Mm.
But I'm not on medication. My doctor said, listen, you are the healthiest non-meat-eating person we know.
Mm.
As far as someone that has a heart condition. I have a heart condition called tetralogy of Fallot, which means I was born without a pulmonary valve. I have 4 heart defects. And I'm 29. It's a miracle to be my age and have my condition.
Mm.
People my age passed away while they were teens at most. So that's why my life can never be a time passed by.
I want to read something to you that was sent to WhatsApp. And I want you to tell me what the first thought that comes to your mind is or how you're feeling about what has been said.
Sure.
The devil is clearly terrified of this woman.
First thing that came to my mind is I pray. I speak to God. He's my best friend. I will name your name. When you have hurt me, when I feel like you could have done things that way, I will name your name. I will cry to God about you. I will report myself to God and say, God, I failed you. I am so sorry. And right now I need you to take away whatever it is that you can take away so that I can be hungry for you. Because right now I'm not in love with you.
Mm.
I'm so transparent with God. I tell him, God, you know, you didn't build me in a way that I should love you.
Mm.
Like, well, you naturally built me that way, but having fallen into sin, I'm no longer in love with you. So I need you to repour and repour the Spirit so that I can enjoy reading your Bible. So yeah, I think that's the first thing that came to me. And I am no longer, I'm not shocked about what might happen to me,
mm.
because I may no longer fight the rape or somebody killing me with a gunshot and whatnot, but I fight a lot of opposition from other young people, a lot. People that have spoken ill of me. I shared my testimony at one camp, and when they of how rape led me to date a lot and just move from one guy to another.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a friend who was at the at the camp, and this Bay man, this was like an ambassador kind of camp. And so I was close to this pastor friend for two reasons. One, we were in the same age group. Two, we were both counselors at the camp. So it was only natural for me to be mostly around him, because the other people, they were not really open. We were both guests invited. All was really friends with us. Do you understand? And second to that, all the other people are younger age groups. And they called us. And one of the people said to me, Sisi, I don't think you have healed, because what you shared as a testimony, we are seeing it now.
Sure.
And they said to us, we needed to declare that we are not in a relationship. And they went back and stood in front of everyone in the church where we were at the camp. Those young people were called, because the young people were like, but why is this Tube always with Pastor Mang Mang? And you guys are saying that we shouldn't date. So they then were called to come and let them know and say, hey, Sister Tube and Pastor Mang Mang are not dating. So those are the things that I have fought. I have fought people saying things like, what is she trying to do with God and growth? You are a woman and it's like you're controlling. Mm. Why are you all over to me? Why you are 1 minute you're doing God and growth? Here we also hear is you're a stylist. Then now I have a tutoring company. Why are you doing everything? Why are you all over? That's one word I've heard so many times.
Have you ever heard those things from people who are actually kingdom builders?
In ministry, I've heard this from people that are fellow ministers, like someone who is in ministry, part of a very inactive ministry like I am. I've heard that.
That's crazy business.
Yeah.
That's crazy business.
People mocking me, I mean, you were there. You were at the conference.
Mm.
You were the MC. And unfortunately, the catering didn't go so well. The company that we hired didn't go so well. And that's something that was beyond my control. I paid the people, but they didn't do what they needed to do.
Mm.
But it went on as if you failed us. You wanted us to pay money only to do this. Even though I sent in a public apology, because obviously I had to literally get into a battle with that catering company. But people that are fellow ministers that are in the ministry, and I'm not talking about pastors or elders. I'm talking about people that are running ministries like me, that understand that anything can go wrong in an event. We're putting my name and the organization's name down. That's the world that we live in, and that's the society that we live in. Mm. But here's the thing. Don't hate on people, because you understand that there's a spirit that is behind that. And that has helped me to love, to forgive, and come back and work with you again. I will work with you, Mbumi.
Mm.
And this is Osebenza, because it's not about my feelings and your feelings. It's about the ones that we've been called to serve.
Yeah. And we're out of time. I really just want to wrap up this conversation by saying, or asking, and I'm not going to make final remarks. Yours will be the last remarks that are going to be shared or aired on the show tonight. And I know I'm not trying to get you to redeem your own name, because that is God's thing to do, right? He's the one who vindicates us. He is the one who makes our name great. I want you to say on air tonight, when the curtain of your life closes, what do you want people to associate with your name? What is the thing they should be saying instead of all the other negative things that have been said?
We never thought we could see a version of Christ walking with 2 feet, and we did through Tube.
I love that so much.
Yeah,
I love that's that my so desire. Much.
An honorable woman, private and publicly.
Sure. You have lived quite a life for a 29-year-old. Hey, I'm not going to make remarks. Oh, Jesus, forgive me. You have lived quite a remarkable life for a 29-year-old. And I'm saying remarkable because you've been marked almost at every point in your life, the devil has marked you. But it turns to me, or it looks to me, that the mark that God has on your life has always conquered. It's always shone brighter. It's always looked bloodier. It has always covered you. And that life that covers you is going to be the life that we see. You know, I said we are going, when the curtain of your life closes, when that curtain closes, we are going to be seeing the covering of God's life, of God on your life. And it will tell the story that you wanted to tell. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Have a lovely one.
Ah, cheers to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am Nompumele Lombonane, and I hope you have just made sense of your life. I hope you've just made sense of your life. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Let's do this again on Monday. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.